Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Washington. I'm your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. Well, you got your popcorn ready? You've got all night to pop it, and you're going to need quite a batch. Be ready, 10 a.m. Eastern Time tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific. Get up early. You're not going to want to miss the blockbuster, the biggest ratings bonanza C-SPAN has ever had. All of Washington is a Twitter, and I don't just mean on Twitter, although I do expect the President of the United States to tweet back. That's right. Jim Comey's back in town. The Comey strikes back. And we expect a doozy of a hearing tomorrow morning. Really, this is Washington's equivalent of the Super Bowl. This is our Academy Awards. This is... well, something America hasn't seen, I don't think, since John Dean testified some 40-odd years ago. Am I making too much of it? Well, let's talk about what we know, and then I'm going to read for you very shortly some of Comey's opening statements, which he just released, which has its own bombshells. But first, there was the hearing today. I don't know if you caught it. The Director of National Intelligence... Dan Coats, former Senator Dan Coats, former Senator of Indiana, current Director of National Intelligence, Mike Rogers, National Security Advisor, and then you had Rod Rosenstein, the Deputy Attorney General, the guy in charge of the investigation ever since Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General, recused himself, and Andrew McCabe, the acting FBI Director. And what a hearing it was this morning. I have to admit, I haven't seen all of it. I've got it on tape. I'm going to go home and watch the rest. I promise you I will. But just what I saw was indeed, I don't know, how can you be both excited and discomforted at the same time? But that's how I felt. It was really interesting, really exciting, and profoundly disturbing. And I got to give credit where credit is due. Kudos to Marco Rubio. You won't hear me saying that a lot. Kudos to Senator Marco Rubio, who asked some really tough questions and seemed to find where the witnesses were hiding the ball. My senator, Mark Warner, asked the opening questions on the Democratic side. He asked very good questions. He was tough. But we got standard pablum answers. We got, oh, I didn't feel pressured to influence the investigation. And the immediate question I had as soon as I heard Mike Rogers and the others say that was, well, you may not have felt the pressure, but did the president try to pressure you? Right? There's a big, if someone calls me up and asks me to kill someone, yeah, I'm no hitman, that's true. But the person who called to hire me, they're still a conspiracy to commit murder, right? There's still someone who is trying to kill. If the president tried to obstruct justice, I'm glad to know that our law enforcement officials did not choose to obstruct justice. Good for them. They get a point. But if the president still tried to obstruct justice, then as far as I'm concerned, it's an impeachable offense whether or not he succeeded. And so good for Marco Rubio for asking the question at the hearing. Okay, all right. You say you didn't feel pressure, but did the president try to pressure you? At which point we heard, I stand by my statement. And like, okay, all right, but your statement was, good for Marco Rubio, your statement was that you didn't feel the pressure. Did you get the pressure? Did he try to put one on you? I stand by my statement. I'm not going to disclose anymore. Or what Dan Coats said, I won't disclose anymore in an open hearing, strongly implying that he would tell the Intelligence Committee in a private session. To which the Democratic Senator Heinrich asked the good follow-up question. Again, I must admit, I'm a little jealous. I would love to be on the Senate committee asking these own questions myself. But they gave good questions. They said, well, all right, you know how easy it would be just to say no. You could just say no. The president didn't try to influence you to, didn't try to obstruct justice, didn't try to stop the investigation into his aide, Mike Flynn. And their statement was, I stand by my prior statement. They didn't say, no, he didn't. They just said, we can't talk about it, or we won't talk about it. It was the clearest non-denial of a denial I've ever heard. And, you know, I've been a lawyer a long time asking tough questions of witnesses. Now, to be fair, I'm not saying that Marco Rubio is doing it out of some wonderful sense of patriotism or love of his country. It may be. It may be he is putting his country first. If so, he gets full credit. It may also be that Marco Rubio is running for president in 2020. Mark my words, you heard it here first. No, I don't have inside information. I'm just putting two and two together. I think Marco's running. I think he's running whether or not Trump is still president then, whether or not Trump is impeached. And if Trump is not impeached and he's still president, I think Marco Rubio will challenge him in the Republican primary, might even win. So politically, it makes sense for Rubio to press hard here. But it could also be simply the case that Rubio wants to get at the truth. I hope it's the latter. I fear it's the former. Either way, I'm glad he asked those tough questions. It also came out today that Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, you remember Jeff Sessions, the guy that has his own racist past, that he actually felt the heat so much that he offered to resign. He told Donald Trump that, Trump, let me back up. Trump did not know or did not plan or did not ask Sessions to recuse himself after it was disclosed that Sessions himself had several contacts with the Russian ambassador, the spy master himself, Ambassador Kishinev, that he failed to disclose it, that frankly he lied under oath to the House Judiciary Committee at his confirmation ceremony when he specifically said he didn't have these contacts that he did have. And so Sessions felt the heat, the political heat, the heat that you and I put on him, that constituents and the mainstream media have put on him, and he recused himself. But apparently he just told Trump a few minutes or hours before he did, and Trump was really angry. He didn't want Sessions to recuse himself. He feared that if Sessions recused himself, then honorable people at the Department of Justice would actually hire a special prosecutor, and he'd get himself in hot water. So he got very mad at Sessions. He knew that his man Sessions could control an investigation. He didn't know Rod Rosenstein, his deputy attorney general, and he was concerned that Rosenstein would do exactly what he did and, frankly, exactly what I predicted he would do before he did it, to appoint a special prosecutor and a well-respected one in Robert Mueller. So this all went down the way Trump didn't want it to go down. What he wanted was loyalty. What he wanted was someone who would stand with him right or wrong. And he got angry at Sessions for recusing himself because that meant that Donald Trump would no longer be in charge of his own investigation. That's right. The criminal would no longer be able to control the cops who investigated him. And while that's true of most criminals, Donald Trump really doesn't like not being in control of his own investigation of himself. So he got plenty mad at Sessions, so mad that Sessions offered to resign. We're going to get to the loyalty in a minute. After the break, I'm going to be reading from Comey's incredible opening statement, which you're going to hear at the start of our Popcorn Fest tomorrow morning. Like I said, get up early. No one's going to accomplish anything in Washington. All day, everyone's going to be glued to their TV set. So don't expect to call the federal government and get much done. It's going to be the show of shows. One more thing, though, I should mention that happened today, and no doubt it happened a day ahead of the Comey testimony to try to take from the Comey testimony, and no doubt Trump felt so constricted, this is good news, so constricted in who he could hire to replace Comey that he was forced, not by, I think, what he wanted to do, but by circumstances, to appoint someone with apparent integrity. He first tried to choose several political people. That was all rejected, including by Republicans. Even a current senator from Texas was rejected. Even Lindsey Graham said he wouldn't support such a politician. Joe Lieberman, another politician. So he's decided to go for a guy by the name of Chris Wray. And I saw his picture this morning, and I jumped. I know Chris Wray. I know Chris Wray personally. I haven't spoken to Chris Wray in more than 20 years, but he was my classmate at Yale Law School. He was in several classes of mine. I do know him personally, and I have to tell you, at least from what I know more than 20 years ago, Chris strikes me as someone who's not only smart, but an honorable person. There are people with whom I had strong political disagreements at Yale Law School. I know that won't surprise you. I have very strong views. Chris, to the best of my recollection, was not one of them. He strikes me as someone, he may well be, I'm sure he's a Republican, but he strikes me as someone who will put his country first. He was not at all the kind of law student that was making machinations and trying to manipulate the system. There were some of those. Not Chris. So, again, Chris, I haven't talked to you in 20-plus years. Let me just say that I remember you in Yale Law School as being a fine, upstanding person, and I, for one, will sleep a little bit better knowing that you almost certainly will be confirmed as the next FBI director. Some people have actually pushed back on me for that because they say, well, Trump did it. It must be terrible. Well, Trump does many, many terrible things. 99% of what he does is terrible. I think he was pushed to choose someone who has a reputation for integrity precisely because he's falling and falling fast. And after the break, I'll talk about all the people he's hiring that don't have any integrity, including his current lawyer in the investigation, Mark Kasowitz. But I will say this. I remember Chris. Not, again, he wasn't my best friend. I haven't talked to him in 20 years, but I liked him. I think the nation will be better with him there. I just wanted to throw that out there. Everyone knows I'm a strong Trump critic, but when someone who I think is an honorable person gets chosen, I think we got to snap them up because that's going to be a rarity in this administration. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. I'll be right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded liberal America. He's Mark Levin. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levin.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I am your host, Mark Levin. Folks, get ready for 10 a.m. tomorrow. Do your work now. Get up early in the morning. Get your work done. You're not going to want to miss Jim Comey and the explosive testimony he is about to render tomorrow morning. I've got a heads up. That's right. Comey has released his testimony, or actually his opening statement, to the public. Now, that's actually traditional. Normally, when a witness comes before Congress, I used to work there. I remember witnesses. They would regularly give out their public testimony a day before, which is common practice. It's to allow the members on the committee the chance to formulate questions based on that testimony. And it gives them a day ahead to decide. That's the general practice. As far as I can understand, it's not required, but it is generally done. And Comey's testimony, his opening statement, does not disappoint. I'm going to spend a lot of today's broadcast reading it to you verbatim, and I'll let you know when I'm not reading it verbatim anymore. But this is what I expect him to testify, practically word for word, tomorrow at 10 a.m., and then will come, of course, the explosive questions. He points out in his opening statement that he's not including every detail, but he's tried to include any information that is relevant to the committee. He starts talking about the first time he met Trump, which was on January 6th at the Trump Tower, that he was there with the intelligence community leaders to brief him on the findings of the intelligence community assessment, quote, concerning Russian efforts to interfere in the election. At the conclusion of that briefing, I remained alone with the president-elect to brief him on some personally sensitive aspects of the information assembled during the assessment, unquote. So here's what we know. We know that it was reported, and we don't know whether it's true. We know it was reported that a British security officer who had monitored Russian communications had found that Donald Trump liked to be, I know no way to say this in any euphemistic fashion. I'll do my best. But Donald Trump liked it when Russian prostitutes, sorry, I can't make it delicate, when they urinated either on him or near him. I don't know. I haven't seen the memo. But that was the personally sensitive information that the press has leaked. Jim Comey does not say this. He just says it was personally sensitive. In any case, he goes on to say that the intelligence community leadership thought it important for a variety of reasons to alert the incoming president. Again, I'm reading, quote, word for word, verbatim, what Comey said, or is going to say tomorrow. The intelligence community leadership thought it important for a variety of reasons to alert the incoming president to the existence of this material, even though it was salacious and unverified. Among those reasons were, one, we knew the media was about to publicly report the material, and we believe the intelligence community should not keep knowledge of the material and its imminent release from the president-elect. And two, to the extent there was some effort to compromise an incoming president, we could blunt any such effort with a defensive briefing, unquote. He says he was asked personally to do so, that it would minimize potential embarrassment to the president-elect. And they also wanted to reassure the president that they were not going to investigate whether this salacious conduct was true or not, which raises an interesting question. Shouldn't we know if it's true? I mean, if the Russians are blackmailing the president of the United States, I actually think it's important to know whether this is true. It's interesting. You know, the reason why Bill Clinton was impeached, according to the Republicans at the time, was not, they said, because he had some kind of sexual conduct with a woman, not his wife. They said that was not relevant. They said that wasn't relevant. What was relevant was that he lied about it. Well, why was it relevant that he lied about it? Well, they were concerned, they told me at the time. And I remember very clearly talking with Republicans at the time. They said, well, we're afraid the president could be blackmailed about it. Of course, the irony is no foreign government knew anything about Monica Lewinsky. It was only discovered because, well, Ken Starr, who was supposed to investigate Whitewater, where he found nothing wrong, went in and Linda Tripp illegally recorded conversations. And I'm not going to go into all what happened in the 1990s. But at least the ostensible argument was the president could be blackmailed about it. In this case, the information is far more salacious. Whatever you think of water sports with Russian prostitutes, I think that's actually worse than simply cheating on your wife, something Donald Trump has done regularly for three wives now. It's more salacious, and it's controlled by our greatest enemy, right? The Russians. This isn't something where some political opponent in Maryland has a beef with Donald Trump. This is something that really could be used to blackmail him in ways that would harm U.S. national security. So one of my questions for Comey is, why not investigate to see whether it's true? In any case, he goes on in his memo to say that he felt it was important for the president to know when hostile foreign powers are trying to influence the United States or to steal our secrets. And it was important for the president to know the substance of this memo. And he did it personally and one-on-one precisely because it was embarrassing. No doubt that's true. I will read on from Comey's statement and give my own commentary thereon, but encourage you to call in if you want to. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back with more of this incredible statement. A lot more here, folks. You'll hear right after the break.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. I'm reading from the explosive James Comey testimony, specifically his opening statement, which he will begin his testimony with tomorrow at 10 a.m., when all of the nation, or at least all of Washington, D.C., I guarantee you'll be watching with bated breath. He's describing his conversations with Donald Trump. I've already described his first conversation on January 6th. And he says that he was prepared to assure President-elect, then President-elect Trump, about the briefing at the time, that they were not opening an investigation on him, a counterintelligence investigation on him, that they agreed, he discussed with the FBI leadership team, and they agreed he would tell them that if circumstances warranted. He felt circumstances warranted without him directly asking the question, and he did offer that assurance. I'm now reading directly from the memo. Quote, I felt compelled to document my first conversation with the president-elect in a memo. To ensure accuracy, I began to type it on a laptop in an FBI vehicle outside Trump Tower the moment I walked out of the meeting. Creating written records immediately after one-on-one conversations with Mr. Trump was my practice from that point forward. This had not been my practice in the past. I spoke alone with President Obama twice in person and never on the phone, once in 2015 to discuss law enforcement policy issues, and a second time briefly for him to say goodbye in late 2016. In neither of those conversations did I memorialize the discussions. I can recall 9 one-on-one conversations with President Trump in 4 months, 3 in person and 6 on the phone. January 27th dinner. This is the one you're going to hear the press talk about a lot. Again, I read from the Comey opening statement verbatim. I expect you to hear him state this tomorrow, pretty much word for word. I mean, sometimes witnesses deviate slightly from their opening statement. With James Comey, I expect it to be very rare. Here's what I fully expect him to say tomorrow, and I quote. January 27th dinner. The president and I had dinner on Friday, January 27th at 6:30 p.m. in the green room at the White House. He had called me at lunchtime that day and invited me to dinner that night, saying he was going to invite my whole family, but decided to have just me this time, with the whole family coming the next time. It was unclear from the conversation who else would be at the dinner, though I assumed there would be others. It turned out to be just the two of us, seated at a small oval table in the center of the green room. 2 Navy stewards waited on us, only entering the room to serve food and drinks. The president began by asking me whether I wanted to stay on as FBI director, which I found strange because he had already told me twice in earlier conversations that he hoped I would stay, and I had assured him that I intended to. He said that lots of people wanted my job, and given the abuse I had taken during the previous year, he would understand if I wanted to walk away. My instincts told me that the one-on-one setting and the pretense that this was our first discussion about my position meant the dinner was, at least in part, an effort to have me ask for my job and create some sort of patronage relationship. That concerned me greatly, given the FBI's traditionally independent status in the executive branch. I replied that I loved my work and intended to stay and serve out my 10-year term as director. And then, because the setup made me uneasy, I added that I was not reliable in the way politicians use that word, but he could always count on me to tell him the truth. I added that I was not on anybody's side politically and could not be counted on in the traditional political sense, a stance I said was in his best interest as the president. A few moments later, the president said, quote, and this is a quote within his quote of the memo, the president said, quote, I need loyalty, I expect loyalty, unquote. I didn't move, speak, or change my facial expression in any way during the awkward silence that followed. We simply looked at each other in silence. The conversation then moved on, but he returned to the subject near the end of our dinner. So stopping reading from the memo, this is Mark Levine now. I just want to repeat what Comey said. He said, the president said, I need loyalty, I expect loyalty. Quote, I need loyalty, I expect loyalty, unquote. And there was a long, awkward silence that followed, during which Comey did not move, speak, or change his facial expression. Think about what you would do in that situation. I think that's probably the correct response. Let's go back to the memo. Quote, at one point, I explained why it was so important that the FBI and the Department of Justice be independent of the White House. I said it was a paradox. Throughout history, some presidents have decided that because problems come from justice, they should try to hold the department close. But blurring those boundaries ultimately makes the problems worse by undermining public trust in the institutions and their work. Near the end of our dinner, the president returned to the subject of my job, saying he was very glad I wanted to stay, adding that he'd heard great things about me from Jim Mattis, Jeff Sessions, and many others. He then said, quote, I need loyalty, unquote. I replied, quote, you will always get honesty from me, unquote. He paused and then said, quote, "That's what I want, honest loyalty," unquote. I paused and then said, quote, "You will get that from me," unquote. As I wrote in the memo I created immediately after the dinner, it is possible we understood the phrase, quote, "honest loyalty," unquote, differently. But I decided it wouldn't be productive to push it further. This term, honest loyalty, had helped end a very awkward conversation, and my explanations had made clear what he should expect. During the dinner, the president returned to the salacious material I had briefed him about on January 6th, and, as he had done previously, expressed his disgust for the allegations and strongly denied them. He said he was considering ordering me to investigate the alleged incident to prove it didn't happen. I replied that he should give that careful thought because it might create a narrative that we were investigating him personally, which we weren't, and because it was very difficult to prove a negative. He said he would think about it and asked me to think about it. As was my practice for conversations with President Trump, I wrote a detailed memo about the dinner immediately afterwards and shared it with the senior leadership team of the FBI. Next meeting, February 14th, Oval Office meeting. I'm paraphrasing here. I'll tell you what I'm quoting from the memo. Comey goes on to say that he met the Oval Office. It was a scheduled counterterrorism briefing that he describes exactly where they sat, and that he was there with the vice president, deputy director of the CIA, national counterterrorism, secretary of Homeland Security, attorney general, and all. There were several others in the room. After it was over, again, I'm quoting from the memo now, the president signaled the end of the briefing by thanking the group and telling them all that he wanted to speak to me alone. I stayed in my chair. As the participants started to leave the Oval Office, the Attorney General lingered by my chair, but the President thanked him and said he wanted to speak only with me. The last person to leave was Jared Kushner, who also stood by my chair and exchanged pleasantries with me. The President then excused him, saying he wanted to speak with me. When the door by the grandfather clock closed and we were alone, the president began by saying, quote, "I want to talk about Mike Flynn," unquote. Flynn had resigned the previous day. The president began by saying Flynn hadn't done anything wrong in speaking with the Russians, but he had to let him go because he had misled the vice president. He added that he had other concerns about Flynn, which he did not then specify. The president then made a long series of comments about the problem with leaks of classified information, a concern I shared and still share. After he'd spoken for a few minutes about links, Rice Priebus leaned in through the door by the grandfather clock. I could see a group of people waiting behind him. The president waved at him to close the door, saying he would be done shortly. The door closed. The president then returned to the topic of Mike Flynn, saying, quote, "He is a good guy and has been through a lot," unquote. He repeated that Flynn hadn't done anything wrong in his calls with the Russians, but had misled the vice president. He then said, quote, "I hope you can see your way clear to letting this go, to letting Flynn go. He is a good guy. I hope you can let this go," unquote. I replied only that, quote, "He is a good guy," unquote. I did not say I would, quote, "let this go," unquote. Comey goes on to say that he had a positive experience with Mike Flynn, and that's why he could say he was a good guy. They left the meeting. Comey points out that he immediately prepared an unclassified memo of this conversation, and he also discussed the matter with FBI senior leadership. Quote, "I had understood the president to be requesting that we drop any investigation of Flynn in connection with false statements about his conversations with the Russian ambassador in December. I did not understand the president to be talking about the broader investigation into Russia or possible links to his campaign. I could be wrong, but I took him to be focusing on what had just happened with Flynn's departure and the controversy about his account of his phone calls. Regardless, it was very concerning, given the FBI's role as an independent investigative agency." Again, I'll paraphrase a bit. He met the FBI leadership. They agreed that it was important not to tell the investigative team about the president's request because it would infect them. It might harm the investigation. They also said there was nothing available to corroborate the account because it was a one-on-one conversation. They said it made little sense to report it to Attorney General Sessions, who we thought would likely recuse himself from involvement in the Russia stuff, and he did, of course, 2 weeks later. At the time, the Deputy Attorney General's role was an acting U.S. attorney. They didn't think he'd be long in this role. So we decided, him and the senior FBI staff, to keep the matter closely held, resolving to figure out what to do down the road as the investigation proceeded. The investigation moved ahead at full speed. None of the investigative members, this is a direct quote from the memo, none of the investigative team members or the Department of Justice lawyers supporting them were aware of the president's request, unquote. Later on, he says he met with Attorney General Sessions. Quote, I took the opportunity to implore the Attorney General to prevent any future direct communication between the president and me. I told the AG that what had just happened, him being asked to leave while the FBI director who reports the AG remained behind, was inappropriate and should never happen. He did not reply. And for the reasons discussed above, I did not mention that the president broached the FBI's potential investigation of General Flynn. There's more, folks. And I've spent a lot of time just reading the memo, but sometimes, as a talk radio host, I need to get out of the way and just give you the information directly, which I've also provided it to the Facebook audience. I'll put it on my website. You should read this testimony for yourself. We're almost done here. Two more things. Page 6, March 30th phone call. On the morning of March 30th, the president called me at the FBI. He described the Russia investigation as, quote, a cloud, unquote, that was impairing his ability to act on behalf of the country. He said he had nothing to do with Russia, had not been involved with hookers in Russia, and had always assumed he was being recorded when in Russia. He asked what we could do to, quote, lift the cloud, unquote. I responded that we were investigating the matter as quickly as we could, and that there would be great benefit, if we didn't find anything, to our having done the work well. He agreed, but then reemphasized the problems this was causing him. Then the president asked why there had been a congressional hearing about Russia the previous week, at which I had, as the Department of Justice directed, confirmed the investigation into possible coordination between Russia and the Trump campaign. I explained the demands from the leadership of both parties in Congress for more information, and that Senator Grassley had even held up the confirmation of the Deputy Attorney General until we briefed him in detail on the investigation. I explained that we had briefed the leadership of Congress on exactly which individuals we were investigating, and that we had told those congressional leaders that we were not personally investigating President Trump. I reminded him I had previously told him that. He repeatedly told me, quote, we need to get that fact out, unquote. I did not tell the president that the FBI and the Department of Justice had been reluctant to make public statements, that we did not have an open case on President Trump for a number of reasons, most importantly because it would create a duty to correct should that change. Stop the memo here. Back to Mark. Get it? He's saying that I didn't want to publicly say that Trump wasn't under investigation because I didn't want us to have a duty to tell the public the moment that he was under investigation, and I thought that could change. I want to make clear you understand the subtext here. Moving back to the memo, quote, the president went on to say that if there were some satellite associates of his who did something wrong, it would be good to find that out, but that he hadn't done anything wrong and hoped I would find a way to get it out that we weren't investigating him. In an abrupt shift, he turned the conversation to FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, saying he hadn't brought up the McCabe thing because I had said McCabe was honorable, although McAuliffe, side point, that's Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe, was close to the Clintons and had given him, I think he meant Deputy Director McCabe's wife, campaign money. It's true that Andrew McCabe's wife ran for the Virginia Senate in 2015 and did not win the race. Back to the memo. Although I didn't understand why the president was bringing this up, I repeated that Mr. Cabe was an honorable person. He finished by stressing the cloud that was interfering with his ability to make deals for the country. He said he hoped I could find a way to get out that he wasn't being investigated. I told him I would see what we could do and that we'd do our investigative work well and as quickly as we could. Immediately after the conversation, I called Acting Deputy Attorney General Dana Buente, since A.G. Sessions had recused himself, to report the substance of the call from the president and said I would await his guidance. I did not hear back from him before the president called me again 2 weeks later. This is the last part of the opening statement. April 11th phone call. Quote, on the morning of April 11th, the president called me and asked what I had done about his request that I get out that he is not personally under investigation. I replied that I passed his request to the acting deputy attorney general, but I hadn't heard back. He replied that the cloud was getting in the way of his ability to do his job. He said that perhaps he would have his people reach out to the acting deputy attorney general. I said that was the way his request should be handled. I said the White House counsel should contact the leadership of DOJ to make the request, that was the traditional channel. Quote, he said he would do that and added, and this is a quotation within the opening statement, quote, because I have been very loyal to you, very loyal. We had that thing, you know, unquote. I did not reply or ask him what he meant by that thing. I said only that the way to handle it was to have the White House counsel call the acting deputy attorney general. He said that was what he would do, and the call ended. That was the last time I spoke with President Trump. So I've read to you pretty much the entire memo now. I paraphrased a few things just to make it go quicker. But in my view, this is pretty explosive stuff. This is a president directly trying to interfere with an ongoing investigation. It is, in three words, obstruction of justice. I'd like to know what you think. Give me a call, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
Never confuse Mark Levin with right-winger Mark Levin. The second E stands for empathy, which the other Mark lacks. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I am your host, Mark Levin. This is pretty explosive stuff that we're going to hear from Jim Comey tomorrow, particularly after reading his opening statement. I think it's fair to say that maybe Donald Trump didn't realize that the general corruption and violation of ethics that he practices in the business world just couldn't happen in government, that actually government has much higher standards than the business world. Oh, I was just going to get to Charlie. That's too bad. I had a caller, Charlie, from Albuquerque, who was going to challenge me, and I was just setting up the pretext for that. Oh, sorry about that. Oh, we got him back. Good. Charlie, line two, Albuquerque. What do you think?
Oh, hi. Hi, Mark. Thank you for taking my call, and so quickly.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of time, Charlie. Got a minute left. I know you disagree with me. Make your point.
My point is, you can have whatever opinion you want. I just wish that the left would start to be part of something instead of against everything. It's just like the vitriol is so hateful.
Charlie, the vitriol. Do you think Jim Comey is lying under oath? Is that your contention?
I just read it from his statement. Not.
Most of my radio show today was reading directly from his statement. Do you think he's telling the truth, or do you think he's lying?
No, I think in this case, in this particular case, I was talking about something more general, but in this case, I do believe he's telling the truth. But he also, but also listening to the testimony today, excerpts that I've heard, you know, there is no there. There's no there.
Let's just talk about there's no there there. You think it's okay for the president to tell a sitting FBI director that he shouldn't go forward with a current investigation? You think that's just fine? You think there's nothing there?
He didn't say don't go forward with the investigation. What he said was, can you see your way clear to drop this?
Yeah.
If the answer is no, then the answer is no.
Uh-huh. Well, you know.
And it seemed as though the answer was no. He can't see his way clear to drop it, but he said.
You know, you can read what you want to read. I'll tell you this, Charlie. In the 12th century, there was a British king, I think it was Henry II, that had a priest that was criticizing him. And he mused openly, will no one rid me of this meddlesome priest? At which point, Sir Thomas A. Becket was murdered in the church a few days later. I think the signs are pretty clear, but you and I will both watch Jim Comey's testimony tomorrow.